And welcome everybody to episode 49 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host, Aaron, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow host, Christina. And this week, we've got another special, special guest, good friend of ours from before the show, good friend of ours, hopefully after the show, Amaru Moses of Bite Size Breakdowns, Ru Reviews on YouTube, and also of a little trivia thing with Christina, the Schmodown. But that is a very distant third to our good friend Amaru. How are you doing today, Amaru?
I'm good. I had to wait an hour and a half for a kid to get picked up from basketball practice after basketball practice was done. So I literally got home and was like, well, I don't have time to rest. I just need to get on right now. But other than that, I'm good. I'm very excited to talk about this movie, because any chance I get to talk about this movie, I will talk about this movie.
Yep. And that movie, by the way, this week is one word titles, and that is 2018's Blindspotting, directed by Carlos Lopez Estrada, starring David Diggs, as well as Rafael Casal, I believe is how you pronounce his name. If I'm mispronouncing, I apologize. But they also... Casal. But either way, great, great selection here by Amaru. Before we go over to him to talk about why he selected this movie, I got to check in with my fellow host, Christina. Dear, how are you today?
I'm just great. I'm just ready for break because my students, the light of my lives, are driving me insane.
We're recording a little later than usual tonight, so we'll see how we hold up. Hopefully Christina can make it all the way through.
Yeah, hopefully I stay awake for the podcast. Yeah,
if the second half, there's just me and Amaru, and we're just like, all right, we'll see you later. Then you know what happened. You know, she's a teacher. So we've got two teachers on the show tonight. So yes, shout out to educators. And real quick, just going back to your comment, Amaru, about the waiting an hour and a half. I was that kid after basketball practice.
Oh my gosh.
Many a nights. Oh. Every single night I was the hour and a half kid. They it's made me
hate it.
Oh, they hated me for many reasons. I broke our youth league. It was called Oaks Basketball. I'm from Okemos, so we called it Oaks Basketball. And I broke the youth record for most technical fouls in a season, which adds up completely.
I can see that.
Did not break any records for points, though. But lots of technical fouls and altercations for your boy here. But enough about my basketball career. Digesting Basketball will return next year. But you picked a movie that I've seen before. Christina has not, which is totally okay. Blindspotting. I have definitely some ideas of why you picked this movie, but rather than me project or assume the ideas, tell me a little bit about not only why you selected this movie, but if you can remember the first time you've seen this movie and kind of what your feelings were about it.
So I've lived everywhere in my life, basically. I was born in New York, moved around a bunch of times, probably about six times before high school, lived in Southern California for high school, but I went to school in UC Berkeley. And after college, I spent another 6 years teaching in Oakland. So I spent 10 years of my life, the majority, longest time I've ever spent in my life in the Bay Area. And the reason I picked this movie, because this is the epitome of the Bay Area. Everything that the Bay Area represents, how much of everything at once it is. It's dangerous. It's cultured. It's a great place to live. You unfortunately can get shot on one corner and then have a cookout on the next. But through all of that, you just feel like it's home. Everything about Oakland is as dangerous as it could be, as high class area as it could be. It just feels like you're welcome there no matter who you are, because through all the trauma, through all pain, through all anything, it's just nothing but love and nothing but getting through it and finding ways to break through and find your best part, finding the good out of everything. And Blindspotting represented that to the fullest. Not only did it represent the culture, the music, the slang, but just the essence of what Oakland feels like. And a lot of times the movie can do that for a place, but just still be not a good movie. It's also an amazing movie on top of that. The acting, the directing is amazing. The storyline, the comedy mixed with the drama, the tension. It is extremely intense and extremely hilarious at the same time. And I absolutely love it. The first time I watched it, it was funny because Sorry to Bother You also came out probably within a month or two. So it was two Oakland movies coming out at the same time. And when I first saw Blindspotting, I saw it at a matinee. So it was really empty. And that's like the one thing I was just like, damn, if I would have seen this in Grand Lake Theater, if you watch the show, if you watch Blindspotting show, because they have a show on Starz now, the opening, the title card is on a movie theater. That movie theater is a very famous movie theater in Oakland called Grand Lake Theater. It's right next to Lake Merritt in the heart of, I'm not going to say East Oakland, because the lake is like right next to Berkeley. So kind of like North Oakland-ish, but basically the Lake Merritt area. But it's extremely famous. A lot of different premieres happen there for a lot of historically black movies. And if I would have seen it there in a packed crowd, the amount of applause and dancing and just energy that would have been in that place, that's the only thing I wish I've seen. But the first time I saw it, like maybe three or four other people, and I just had a good ass time just getting hyphy in my seat and just following along with every beat piece of Bay Area culture that they put forward in it, and especially the Oakland culture. I loved it from the moment I saw it.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer. Beautiful. And just real quick, there are a ton of great Oakland movies out there. Yeah. And you kind of sparked it for me. I saw three in the span of about 3 to 6 months in a way too empty of a theater in Blindspotting, Sorry to Bother You, and Dope, where I saw those with like a total of like 12 people for those three movies in theaters. So like, unfortunately, and then Slight, another one I saw in that period where it was, I think I saw Slight with nobody else in the theater. So yeah, again, there's a ton of, but I would say, I would venture to say, although I have no authority on this, this would be the preeminent Oakland movie. If you think Do the Right Thing is a like kind of a preeminent kind of New York movie, I would think of this for this coast in that way. And I think clearly that was one thing that kind of stuck out to me rewatching it here was just, this is a subtle Spike Lee, not to make it that simple of a comparison, but you can definitely see the influence of Spike Lee on Carlos Lopez Estrada in
for sure.
Making this movie.
For sure.
And I don't want to make it sound like a copy and paste of Do the Right Thing, though. But
no, a lot of the close-ups, a lot of like the background zooming in on you, the real long shots and on stuff. It's not like Spike Lee, but it's Spike Lee reminiscent. And yeah, I would definitely say it's at least modern-wise, this is the preeminent Oakland movie, because there's a lot of Bay Area movies, but this is Oakland.
Yes.
And there's probably one, because I watched a lot of movies before I moved there, so there's probably a couple of movies that are Oakland-based that I didn't know about until I moved there. So there's probably another one, but modern day for sure. It's Blindspotting.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, again, sometimes you have like a movie and you don't realize its impact at the time. When this came out, I did feel that the impact was pretty clear. It was very clear commentary on what we were seeing in the media and our real lives anyways. And then 5 years later, that much more, you're like, this is like the classic here that really kind of holds up more than kind of any movie, I think, from 5 years ago that's the most important to revisit from that 2016 range. So I was really glad to revisit that myself. And then, yeah, Christina, what were your kind of thoughts on this going in? What had you heard about this before seeing it?
The only real stuff I've heard about it is Rue talking about it since I've met the man. So I have been waiting the entirety of the pandemic, because eventually once we knew we were doing this podcast and it was one world title, Rue was like, I'm going to be on that. And I'm like, awesome. I'm going to watch Blindspotting. And then I was like, shit, that's all the way at the end of this damn list. So I've heard you talk about this for the first few months and now I have to wait. But all I know is that he loved it. He felt it represented something from, you know, his life, his childhood, something he can relate to just being in that area. So I was just excited to watch it because I was like, Rue's a cool person, so this movie's probably cool.
All right. Also a great answer, you know.
Yeah.
All answers are valid here. Yeah, I definitely am looking forward to jumping into this. So before we do jump in any further, Christina, if you could give us our IMDb synopsis so we can get to our first rating of the night.
While on probation, a man begins to reevaluate his relationship with his volatile best friend.
That's my favorite synopsis that we've had on this show so far. There isn't any assumptions. I think last week we had descriptors like lovable oaf put into the descriptor there. It got very, very like assumatory of how I feel about the characters here. The guy's volatile, no doubt. He's his best friend. He's evaluating his relationship. He's on probation. He's a man. Five
check,
stars.
Check.
Five stars. It could have told me 3 days left, but that's okay. You know, I'll let that slide.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm telling you, Rue, with the amount of synopsis we've heard on here where it's just like, why are they like getting into this much detail? Or like, there's like, this is as good as it gets right here. I'm very happy with the synopsis.
Nice.
All right. I'm going to just start us off real quick, though, of watching this movie. The guy that plays Miles looks just like some dude that my friend used to bang. And I never liked that guy. So I went into this being like, yo, that looks like that dude. I don't like him. Yeah. So this guy looks like the dude that my friend used to bang. And I was like, I don't like that dude. So no, I didn't like Miles from the get go. So I just wanted to throw that little tidbit out there before we jumped in that I was like, this guy looks like someone I know. And both people suck, in my opinion.
That's hilarious because Miles reminds me exactly of my best friend. Maybe not to that point, or at least when I'm around, not to the point that he gets, but his mannerisms, how he talks, how he carries himself, how people still gravitate toward him, because that is exactly 100% my best friend.
I was mostly just like his looks. I was, yeah, his Miles like personality of like being charming and like is definitely not what this other dude has. He just sucks all around. But I was like, I was just like, where do I know this guy? Like, I know this guy from somewhere. Like, has he been in other movies? And I was finally was like, I do know you. You used to bang my friend. Anyway, jump into the movie now.
Yeah, yeah. No, good tidbit though. Good to know.
Yeah, just fun facts about my life, everyone. So I will say this movie was like very anxiety ridden for me because I'm not really into like the countdown, because I was like, oh shit, like as we get closer, like I know how movies like this turn out. Something's mm-hmm. going to go down and he's going to go back to jail. And like, he seems like a really nice guy. And like, I was like, this is what I'm going to watch. And the whole movie is just going to be being like, when is something going to happen that this poor man's going to fuck up his probation? And that's what I thought the whole movie was going to be about. And I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop. And there was multiple points in this movie where I literally clenched my ass cheeks together because I was so nervous.
I've seen this movie probably a good 10 times now in the last 3 years, at least 10 times. And there's a specific point in the movie. My heart races even knowing what's coming. So whenever mm-hmm. we get to that part, Christina, you can guess what part when I know what's coming.
I'm going to imagine.
My heart is always like, ah, shit. Ah, shit. Ah, shit.
I'm going to imagine it has to do with Sean, the little boy.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yep, my ass has never been tighter, man. I literally felt my butthole go into my body. I was clenching so hard. I was so nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's like the scariest part of the movie, and a movie with a ton of pretty horrific parts. Maybe the preeminent scene that starts the movie off. But either way, like, I think a huge theme of this movie overall is that we all have kind of a Miles in our life to some extent or another. Obviously not to this extreme, but it's just, and maybe sometimes I've been the Miles to people where it's like, why are you friends with that person? Why you keep being friends with the person? Like, it's, I don't know. It's just like, and you know, even I think that's why, you know, as great as David Diggs is in this movie, I feel like Miles's character really is what stood out to me on this rewatch, actually, because he does have so many volatile qualities, as IMDb put it, but he also is extremely charismatic and just like, you're not like rooting for him, but you're finding yourself understanding kind of at a lot of points why he's the way he is. And he's not as evil as a character until the very end, obviously, the party, like it kind of is a point of no return.
But even then, he's not evil. He just does dumb shit and he's impulsive. That's what I'm looking for. He's impulsive because at the same time when he's that impulsive and he can get you into stupid shit, he's also probably the most loyal person in the entire film. He is a friend you want to have your back in any situation. So it's like finding like, look, I know how good of a person he actually is. I just got to figure out how to tell him stop doing dumb shit. And like, that's a big thing in the movie.
Yeah, very true. I mean, definitely. But let's just kind of start at the beginning in the cars. I think how the movie starts out, they're in their friend's Uber, the purple light shining from the bottom of the car.
After they do the opening shot about basically introducing how Colin got into probation, saying that he's on probation, he has a year left, he finished up his sentence, and then he goes immediately into the car. Yeah.
Yep.
They gave like the rules.
Yeah. And there are like 7 or 8 points, you know, in the first couple scenes, once you learn like he's 3 days away from probation, where you're like, you're 3 days away from probation. Stay in your room. Don't go anywhere. But, you know, that while that is, you know, there's kind of, well, but movie is always kind of the rebuttal I'll have to that. Also with that, it's not like after these 3 days, all of a sudden, he's like, now I can get into trouble. Now I can get into situations I shouldn't be in. Like, it's not like after probation ends here.
Not a felon anymore.
Yeah, yeah. He's still a convicted felon for the rest of his life, which, you know, they get into that conversation at the halfway house, how he's going to have to always prove people otherwise. He's always going to first be, which is another form of blind spotting right there. Do we go on to kind of explain what blind spotting means a little bit, you know, and what the significance of kind of that as a title, actually, because I think that was like, it just applies to just about every layer of life, but especially in this movie, it really, I think, shows up in a lot of spots, and particularly right there with Colin. Okay, my fault. Famously, I forget every character's name. So like, I think sometimes I call like a Jason, a Josh, whatever. So Colin, sorry. But yeah, Colin is just a walking blind spot here now because he has this felony on his record. He's always going to be a convict and then a person. But even the casting of Colin with David Diggs, it's like, you know, it's kind of interesting because this is around the time of Hamilton. So right. Like you're seeing, it's like, is the reason you're kind of seeing him in a softer light because you're recognizing him as this casted member from Hamilton, the musical? It's like, well, if it was just a different actor, maybe you would be viewing them in a different way. So it's almost like, what layer are you viewing the actors through? And it's just, it was kind of interesting to me. I wonder if that was intentional with the casting of David Diggs or not at the time of the movie.
Well, he wrote it. Yeah.
Right. But casting himself in that position still, I just wonder.
He has like soft features and like he has this big bright smile. And I just think that like makes him lovable. I think there's just other actors that have like just a harder jawline. You know what I mean? Like they're smoldering more. And it's hard to like break that wall of being like, is this guy a good guy? Because he kind of looks like he's mad all the time. And I just don't feel like David Diggs has that quality.
Yeah. And that's a good point in terms of like what blind spotting is. So, like I think this watch was the first time where the actual scene where they say blind spotting and they explain what it is. This is the first time I was like, oh shit, they're really like just saying, you know, this is what's happening right now with police profiling and all of that.
Yeah.
It does such a good job of by the time that actually comes up, you're not thinking about them like putting it out on the table because it's been put out on the table for you without saying it. Because usually a lot of movies, whenever they spell something out for you, you're like, oh, you got to tell us. But like in this movie, it comes so late. Where you're already saying, so basically blind spotting is that they set it up. You know those pictures where like there's two contrasting lights, one light, one dark, and some people would see one image and other people would see another image first. So like two faces facing each other, or do you see a face? And your brain is automatically trained to always see one over the other and never both at the same time. And so when they do that, they basically are connecting it to when you see Colin and Miles. Colin, a big black dude with braids versus Miles, a white dude with his hair slicked back from Oakland, you are automatically going to assume, based on where you're from, big black dude, dangerous.
Correct.
White dude, probably coming in and gentrifying and being the hipster. When in actuality, and he said it, and I'm going to ask this now, can I say the N-word?
Yes, you can.
Miles, he said it. Miles, the white dude born and raised in Oakland, is the nigga that everybody's looking for to do the dumb shit, while Colin is actually a good dude getting his shit together who happened to get in a situation that now puts felon in front of his face. And then at the same time, like Christina said, but you also know David Diggs as the nice dude who looks, who you know because from Hamilton and other ones, he doesn't seem that threatening. So it's kind of at the same time, dually being a blind spotting. And that's just everything in terms of black men, police brutality, black men in society, and all that. And white people coming in and gentrifying. So.
Yeah, it's it is the power of the rewatch is beautifully displayed in this movie. I've gotten to rewatch a few movies this year for this podcast, but I think this one, it was really like, once you're looking for it, it's almost like, oh my God, it is everywhere. And it's not just in the movie though. It's in every realm of life, which again, that probably is from my position being a little bit ignorant, but we're starting out with, you know, the first scene, I think there's six guns inside of the car, they say at some point, like it's so many guns. Like, it's just like, he's like, why do you have six guns in your car? Like, you do not need six guns in your car. Like, they keep, like, you know, like, bringing them out, measuring them against each other, like, holding them, pointing at each other, just every kind of all the above, like where it's just like, is this movie starting out? It's just like, is he going to, you know, I'm sure you were kind of thinking right from the beginning, what kind of movie am I watching? Is he getting arrested right away? Is this like a prison movie? Like,
you know, I go into these as blind as possible. So I didn't really know what to expect, but I do appreciate that at some point where he realized his friends weren't going to stop messing with him, that he was like, whatever, just don't know. Let me know that you have it. I need plausible deniability. Like,
it's like, you can't get away from your environment to a certain extent too. So,
and we also physically can't get out the car. And as much as we're talking about this, you don't, unless you're watching it, you don't recognize this is a comedic scene. It's a hilarious scene, them bringing out gun after gun after gun after gun. And then all of a sudden you set up, oh, this is the Uber. This is also a Uber.
Gotta make my money, man.
Well, were they friends with the Uber driver, though?
Yes, they were.
Yeah,
they were friends with the Uber driver.
It just sets it up so nicely because it's like, to even go back to talking about Miles, it's one of those things. I know if I've had the conversation with like girlfriends in my life that it's been like, if I met you now for the first time, like, would I still be your friend? Am I only friends with you because we've been friends our whole life? Mm-hmm. And I feel like Colin starts to get this where it's like, bro, I get it. Like, this is all the shit we used to do. But like, I'm on probation, like have my back right now and like not be slinging guns around in a freaking Uber.
Yeah, the thing is, like, but when you grow up in that environment, it's unfortunately in situations like that, it's kind of the norm. Mm-hmm. And it's not a, like, they're not thinking, oh, we're going to get you in trouble. We're thinking, yeah, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. We'll be fine. And that's why it comes off as a comedic scene, because it's like, of course, my friend is going to put me in this really stupid situation, but he's still my boy. So let me just get the hell out. Just get me out. Please just get me out. And the more they hold him in, the quote unquote funnier it is. And so you're like, get me out of this car.
Well, as a suburban girl born and raised, I don't understand city life. And I have friends that live in the city, but they went to like college in the city and then like lived there as adults, which is not the same thing as growing up in the city.
Yeah. And one thing that I can kind of say is a lot of the gentrification kind of angles and just overall angles of kind of going from kind of a safe area of the city to kind of an area of the city where you can see a shooting happen, like what happens with Colin very soon after into the movie. It's like the ensuing incident is, I live in Washington, D.C., where gentrification is king. It's happening all over the place. Where my neighborhood where I live now, like, has neighborhoods that are across the street that have been demolished now to have like a nice high rise put up and a Trader Joe's put up where people used to live and things like that. So I'm seeing all the hipsters come in and all that, things like that. And that's just, you know, with Colin, he lives in a halfway house. He's 3 days away from being able to move out of the halfway house here. He's on probation and he's just going home just after 11 o'clock. He's going home to try to, or around 11 o'clock, and simply driving through to get home to his neighborhood, stops at a stoplight.
Yep. He's at the stoplight and it's holding him there for forever. He's trying to make it home at 11. And then as soon as it turns green, this dude runs in front of his car. He's like, what you doing? And as he runs in front of the car, cop chasing him, yelling at him to stop, pulls out his gun. And the black guy says, don't shoot. And the cop immediately shoots him 4 times, kills him. And Colin witnessed this whole thing from right next to the cop. You see, and that's actually, again, this second time, like really recognizing how quote unquote beautiful of a shot is, because you see the cop out of his side window, but in the rear view, you see, I think Randall was his name.
Randall,
his fallen body. And it's like, it's horrible, but it's like, wow, the way he set that up where you're seeing them both at the same time. And this entire movie, that kind of setup where they put you in a scene that is funny and endearing and getting you to know the characters and you're feeling lighthearted, and all of a sudden they just hit you with something hard like that. It's wild, and it's unfortunately what life is like.
Yeah, absolutely. And the comedy never undercuts the dramatic tension in any way. It just adds to the realism of what life is exactly. So, you know, even right before he gets shot, you guys see Colin like looking back and forth, thinking about, he's like, should I just run this red light? Like the thing we've all been dead red light where it's like, no.
But, and then for him, he's like, nah, I'm like 3 days away from probation. Let me not get run.
Let me do the right thing here and wait. And then if you would have just ran that light, like, yeah, Randall still would have been gone, which is, you know, unfortunate of itself. And, you know, fascinating when you look into the background of the writing of this movie and how there's a real life case of an incident in Oakland, which kind of inspired that to be added as the ensuing incident. Yeah, I mean, it's not that cop who shot him, though, who's like, move on. It's another cop who drives up and is like, hey, move on, which Jen, again, kind of dispels the one bad cop type of myth that always happens when these things come up where it's like, oh, it was just the one guy. It just shows right away. It's kind of a systematic way of how they operate with murder is when it happens, move on, no witnesses. And not to mention, Colin can't be a witness. It's not like they could see like, oh, he's a convict and they didn't even know that. But it's like, Colin's like, who am I going to go tell the cops that I was breaking probation and like that one of their people killed.
Like, exactly. And so he brings it up in the next scene, the next morning, just nonchalantly, he tells Raphael and then Miles's girlfriend, Ashley, played by Jasmine Cephas Jones. Oh, I saw a cop shoot a nigga last night. And it was just that's how he says conversation. Like, oh, really? Are you okay? And they just go on about their day. And then like talking about, and then in the convenience store next, he was like, what was I going to do? Hey, police. I just saw y'all shoot this dude. Yeah, I'm a convicted felon. So I'm going back to jail. Okay, what time you want to meet? You want me to arrest me?
Well, and it's just frankly, I would never think twice about not calling the cops after I saw something like that. But I'm very interested at, you know, if this happened to you, Amaru, and your real life situation, you saw this happen tonight. And like you would have no trouble calling the cops, or would you have some trepidation?
I'm curious. I would not call the cops right then and there. I would get somewhere with my family and then call the police.
There's the difference right there. I'm calling right there and not worried at all. Christina is too, I assume, right?
I am a woman, so I'm also going somewhere safe before I call anything.
But there's a different reason that you see what I'm saying here. Like, there's an extra level of thought Amaru has that I don't.
I've seen too many people of color recording something and the cop arrests them for recording and then they're in jail for obstructing justice. I'm going around people that can give me some legal representation of my family. I'm calling. I said, I was a witness. Who am I going to right now? But I am not staying around that situation at all.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably not just because there's maybe a guy, now I think about it. But again, it's just like, I'm not having that thought of, I need people around me when I make the call is my point. I won't keep berating it, but it's just something that this movie and movies like this cause white people and just people of any color to think about the extra steps or lack of extra steps they have to do in making a call for their safety. And then me in the ultimate safe spot as a white male, I really don't have to. I'm like, I'll drive down the block and make the call. Like, Christina has to go and be safe because she's a woman. You have to go because you're a person of color. And then me, I'm just like, I gotta get away from the bullets, but I'll make the call when it's convenient for me. And I'll be like, I don't think there's gonna be a problem. Like, I haven't seen a lot of these videos. Like, it just,
the great thing about this movie, and I mentioned before, they don't put all of this in your face at all. They just play it like real life. This is just, unfortunately, an everyday thing for us. We're going to talk about it like a regular conversation. And all of that we just thought of comes from our own watching experience. They never put it in front of you, because I'm black, this happened.
Like, right.
They didn't even mention because he's a convicted felon until the next day. You see in his mannerisms, you see in what he's doing, that in his head, he's like, oh my God, what am I witnessing right now? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I'm late. I need to get in before curfew.
And I have not seen many movies. I've seen tons of movies with PTSD as, you know, a forefront of the thematic kind of impact, but I haven't seen it where it's a witness to a traumatic incident and their PTSD from, because everybody has a chance of seeing something horrific and then having to deal with the witnessing of it. And that's what you get to experience through Colin. It is not kind of a position you often see. You usually see the PTSD from the direct experience to the person involved in the incident, as opposed to kind of the witness and that and the impact on the witness moving forward. So, and you know, again, I've not ever sat down with my friends the next day and talked about somebody I knew or knew of getting shot just lightly either. So again, a little bit of a difference that watching this movie kind of presents and then allows the observer to kind of take from the movie. So is there somewhere kind of we want to go next with regards to this for you, Christina?
I mean, I don't know if we necessarily need to go in order, but I would like to talk about his relationship with Val, because it's kind of like, at first it was like, does he just have a crush on this chick that works with him? Is there a past? And like, I kind of like how they played that, where it was like, I wasn't sure where they were going, like if he just had a crush on her or if they knew each other. But like, she like lit him up a few times about like his relationship with Miles, the fact, you know, that he did commit these crimes. And I really appreciated her in that situation because she was there for him, but like didn't take his bullshit.
So they definitely are exes. Like,
yeah. Yeah. No, I got that eventually, but I like how in the beginning they didn't just shove that in your face.
Yeah. 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 And that ends up becoming another big point of contention for Miles and Colin. And what I like about it is that on both sides, it's kind of a parallel. How do I treat this relationship? Because with Miles and Colin, it's like Miles and Colin were best friends since they were 12. They had each other's back. They know each other. They are brothers, but there's still some like, okay, Miles puts him in some bullshit. And then on the other end, Val and Colin definitely have a connection, but at first you don't know, you understand their connection has been severed somehow and you don't know why and you don't understand the situation that did it, but they still have to work together. And that is also a point of contention where Val thinks Miles needs to get out of Colin's life. Miles thinks Val needs to come out of Colin's life. Because when he actually went in on probation, she never came and saw him. She talked to him on the phone only one time, didn't put any money on his books. And it's like, this person who cares for you completely left you just to dry while you're on probation. And on both sides, it's like, well, there's reasons why both of them are acting the way that they're acting. It's like, do you really drop that kind of relationship? Or do you fight through them and make them better, even though both sides are telling you the other side needs to go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I get why she doesn't like Miles, though, but I don't know. It's just, I've never liked people like Miles that I just feel like get all their people involved in some shit and like never take responsibility for it. Where it's like, when we find out why Colin got arrested, which was honestly one of the funniest scenes of how it was narrated, of just like pure comedy and then like watching the seriousness of it. Mm-hmm. His thing is like, I'm loyal. I'm always there for my boy. And it's like, bro, you didn't even need to help. Like, you came over and kicked a man while he was down. Cool, you're hard. Congratulations. Like, you're not hard, dude. You're fucking pussy who acts like you're cool because you kicked the guy when he was already on the ground. Mm-hmm. Like, shut the fuck up, honestly.
Looking for me from somebody who understands that, it's literally, and it comes back in the fight later that Miles gets into. And it's actually kind of weird because it's something personally that happened to me. If your boy is in a fight, you go in and help. Doesn't matter what's going on. Whether he started it, whether he finished it, whether he's getting one-on-one, you go in and help. Or they're coming around and turning around looking at you like, dude, what you doing? Did you have my back? And it always makes me think of, so the situation I was in, I've always been the smart one around all the cool kids. So like, none of my friends were ever in the gangbang, and none of my friends, but they were always like, they've gotten into fights before. They weren't like going in honors class like me, but I was always a smart one going into that. And one day, me and my boy were walking into school, and all of a sudden, three dudes that we knew that we were cool with came in and started hitting them. And I froze because I was like, oh crap, I see a teacher there. He's going to stop it. I froze, and it's me. And I've never gotten a fight in my life. My boy was good. They broke it up. And then people were going to him like, yo, how did Rue not jump in? How did Rue not? And Easy was like, nah, that's Rue. Rue doesn't do that. Rue doesn't fight. I see where you're coming from. But Rue isn't the one, the type to do that. But at the same time, if it was him and another one of my friends, his first thought is, I don't care how many people it is, I'm there for my boy. So that's the other side to look at it. Miles had his back because Miles was getting into something. This dude was being stupid. So I have to jump in. And it's both sides. It's hella stupid. But on the other end, that's what the relationship is when you have friends like that. That is literally the code.
That's a boy thing. Girls don't do that shit.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
If you're going to go get your ass beat, bitch, have fun.
Yeah, but no, it's another just doing the right thing, and doing the right thing is not always the same thing. If that makes sense, exactly. You know,
like, exactly. It's at the same time, it's a dilemma of like, what do I do in this situation? Right. Before going on another point, because I just wanted to add to the PTSD thing, I really love how they handled Black men's PTSD because Colin already had PTSD before this, but this is something that kicked it off. And David Diggs, throughout the whole thing, especially towards the end, the amount of emotion that has to come out at so many different points in the movie where you see like everything that's pent up is finally come out. Because at the beginning of the movie, nonchalantly, I saw a nigga got shot today by the cops. Oh, that is just an everyday thing. Just talking about it. All that is there to humor, to cover up all the pain and trauma.
It's festering. It's festering.
People who live in poverty and live in squalor have to deal with, and how they do so well at using humor and using those around you to kind of cover it. And both when it comes out in the real life situations and in the spoken word sections.
Yeah.
It are both just amazing, because usually like those spoken word sections in movies, sometimes they can be real. Like, why are we doing
this? Yeah. This including in Spike Lee films where it's happened, where literally they put down a soapbox to have the character get up.
It's so heavy handed. It's so,
we can go, let's just go to that right now. Well, let's just jump to kind of that final scene right now. Cause I think
all the way to the final scene,
just the decision of it. And we can jump back, but I think it's important to talk about with the decision for spoken word in that point. Because huge point of contention for the movie, and I am a staunch defender of it. But
so that's a huge point, is because so the final scene, I'll wait till that till we get to it a little bit later. But
okay, all right, fine.
Points of spoken word. They set it up in a dream sequence first to say this is what something you're going to see. This is something that, and if you know Raphael Casal and David Diggs, they rap. They have an album that they rap. They have a couple of them. If you haven't seen the Miles tapes and the Collins tapes of Blindspotting, because it's their two soundtracks, go pick that up. It's great. It's amazing. But they actually rap, and there's interludes of them doing spoken word. And throughout the movie, I think the second scene in the movie, they just start rapping. They just start freestyling. And throughout the movie, they freestyle what they see. And that sets up the dream sequence and the spoken word point at the end. And that it doesn't make it heavy handed. Because usually, like, you could put the soapbox and it's just right in your face. But the fact that they set up, no, they freestyle with each other all day. You had that dream sequence and then the spoken word at the end. It makes perfect sense. And it fits perfectly to express all of that.
Yeah, and I'll have more thoughts when we get to that in a few minutes here. But Christina, where do you kind of want to take us before we get to the end here?
One, I would like to point out that I liked the barbershop scene. Yes. I don't like suspense. Fuck Alfred Hitchcock and Shyamalan Knight. Yeah. I just thought that part was funny. I just want to throw that out there.
Shout out to Tisha Campbell.
Yeah. I want to talk about, like, I felt a little personally attacked because, and I just felt like this was like an old age thing and not like that I'm a hipster, but like, I thought that party that they went to at the end was lovely. I would love like a laid back, like nice house, like give me a nice charcuterie board. Are you making cocktails in the back? Like, do we have craft beer? And I was like, oh my God, I'm not a hipster. I'm just 33. Like, I'm just old. Like, I just don't want to go where it's loud. And like, I don't want people touching me. Like, I was fun when I was in my 20s. I would have totally gone to the club and like crowded bars. But like now I just want something like laid back and we have calmer music in the background. Like, I want to be able to not have a headache the next day. And I felt like personally attacked that people that enjoy those things are now hipsters. And I don't want to be one. I'm too cool to be a hipster. And now I feel like my whole life doesn't have meaning anymore.
All right, so that's just something you're gonna have to take. You're gonna have to take it in a couple ways, because gentrification is just it hits so many cities. When you are part of the gentrification, just because you're in, like, improving your life, that's something you got to take with it. What makes it worse? Because it's just like all y'all are coming in, so immediately be like, y'all are coming in and taking our spots, blah blah blah. But if people see, like, no, you're just an actual person living your life, and you actually take into account, hey, I want to make things better, I'm just living here. It's when you become the dude that goes to the only two black people in the party and say, hey, you want some drink? That's when it's the fuck shit. Because I've been in so many parties in Oakland that are exactly that way. And it's the cool ass party. It's people I know who teach in the inner cities, who work with the people around the community, who help build it up, but also they just trying to live their lives. So they also know that if somebody's going to talk to them about gentrification, they own up to, like, yeah, I'm part of that gentrification, but I'm also going to try to do everything I can to help the community as a whole. So you gotta take that with your lumps if you're doing that. It's really the stupid fuck shit you do after that is like, you know what? This is attacking you. You who thinks you need to code switch when you don't need to put on the accent. You can be yourself. You don't gotta lie to kick it, homie. You don't.
But this it's interesting how this happens for Miles at that party, is that he is completely thrown into that category and called the culture vulture, which I'd never heard that term before this movie. I don't know if
cultture appropriator, culture vulture.
Yeah, culture vulture. Like, and it's just like, for, you know, I'm not trying to feel bad for Miles here, but like, Miles gets this shit all the damn time, and I feel bad for him. I feel terrible for him. I know Miles.
I know the white kids, the Asian kids, the light-skinned Latino kids who are born and raised in that culture. Right. So when they grow up and the gentrification comes, they have to be like, yo, I'm exactly
I got extra proof.
This is actually him. This is actually right. how he talks, how he lives. This is around. He is a somebody loyal to the soil, but he gets lumped in with everybody else. And it's another point of blind spotting. It's such everything in this movie, every point of contention is a double-sided coin. Like, to the root of it, it's about you really got to get to know the people before you make a judgment. You got to get to know Miles, and you got to say, look, you do fuck shit. You need to be called out on your bullshit. But in essence and in general, you are a good dude. That's why I love that scene in the end, the fight between Colin and Miles, where Colin is like, you say nigga. I want you to say nigga. And he's like, I can't, what are you talking about? I'm not going to say that word. Exactly. And having that point of contention where it's like, y'all have been boys for so long. I know how real you are, but there's stuff that you got to deal with being a white person growing up in Oakland that I don't deal with being a black person growing up in Oakland, while you're still having to deal with people coming to you and putting you on Front Street. Like, you're not an actual authentic person. And it's just so, that's why this movie is so good, because it's all gray. It is all a gray area from front to back.
Yeah.
Exactly. I thought from the party to that scene were like the best parts of the movie, because I think that's like a real authentic conversation of like, this is how I'm feeling. And like, this is how I'm interpreting. You're not seeing it from my point of view, and I'm not seeing it from your point of view. And like, it's just, you know, like, you're being an asshole. Like, you're being an asshole, and I'm going to get in trouble for it because of how I look, even though you're the one that's doing it. And like, you can't act like this, because it's not going to happen. You're not going to get in trouble the same way I'm going to get in trouble based on how we look. And like, that was another big point of it. And it's like, that's a conversation that needs to be had, because that's factual. That's how the world works, unfortunately. And I think people just need to be aware of that, especially if those are going to be your deep personal friendships. You need to take that into account, that you may not see the race difference because you've been friends your whole life, but it's still there. Mm-hmm. And like, that you still need to respect that.
I think, you know, it is a really, I mean, tremendous kind of example of making you feel sympathy for a character throughout the movie. You're kind of throwing your hands up at and just like frustrated with. And even if they were to get in trouble after this party scene, Colin is the one who probably would have gotten to blame for it. Not
absolutely,
you know. And it's just like, that's the whole point. This is just like, so often the white privilege in movies is put in such a way that it's hammered over your head, and either it's so eye roll you kind of miss the point of it, or you ignore it, or it doesn't feel real. And this is just an example of white privilege that's not often shown in movies. So the PTSD, the way it's shown, is in a different way, and the white privilege in the way it's shown is,
I think it's not shoved in your face, because even though Miles has the white privilege, he recognizes he has that white privilege while also recognizing, I'm a poor white kid from Oakland who hung out with all the black people. So like, and they accepted me. So I'm authentic and real to this. So I follow all the same rules, but I know I can never say the N-word. I can't ever do that. But that's something that also doesn't get brought up. So when it's brought up, it's like, I really got to think about, okay, please don't call me that anymore. And before we get to the end parts, that comes to the other thing I really want to talk about in blind spotting is how funny this movie is. One reason you actually feel sympathy for Miles, or how at that point you are sympathetic to both of them at the same time, how Miles is in the wrong, but you can tell he's a great friend, but he's still in the wrong. It seems like the beauty shop scene where he gets on the soapbox and he just has a mouthpiece.
Yes.
Selling the flat irons to the beauty shop. My favorite scene. And so I was on Your List Sucks in the 10 best scenes of 2010s. And I chose, and it's like one scene for a movie, and I chose the scene from Blind Spotting. I didn't choose the end scene. I chose the scene where he sold the boat.
Sold the boat.
He sells the boat. And the back and forth conversation that is 100% yay area slang. And then I memorized Colin's part for YLS to just spit it. I don't remember it anymore, but the way they go back and forth, put the woo-wop on the rear view. is it dirty? Is it clean? $300? 200 budos? Fast. Let's go. And he goes back up to Colin and he said, hey, what do you say? Oh, I have no idea, but I got $300 and we're about to put this boat in the back of the truck. It's absolutely hilarious. And it seems like that show you as much trauma or as much pain or as anything that can go on in the city. All these people have vibrancy. All these people have charisma and love, and just, it's so much how skilled they are at living life. Even they got to deal with all this bullshit. They know how to live life still. So all of that comedy, and you said it doesn't undercut the scenes, because the scenes get intense. They get real intense. And it's those comedy moments that don't fit, that are not forced. They just, they come naturally. You mentioned it before, the narration of how Colin, what sent Colin to jail.
Yes.
Yes.
With the white dude who
the scorpion bowl.
An asshole getting a scorpion bowl and then ended up him being the one going outside with alcohol when he isn't. Colin being the dude in the front, dude being the bouncer, telling him to go in, and the white dude's being a complete asshole, pushes him, and then they get into a fight. The one thing I want to mention that I love and why I love this movie, that bar, the alley, that was my trivia bar. That was the bar that I told my friends, yo, we're going to the alley on Monday night. The business card stapled all up on the wall. It's a little hole in the wall place. And I saw it. I was like, yo, that's my spot. That's my trivia spot. So I loved it. I loved it. And Uktash Ambuskar, whatever his name is, narrating the whole scene and doing the V Diggs voice and doing Rafael Casal's voice and the white dude's voice. It's pure comedy. And it's pure comedy in a fucked up situation. And it's hilarious.
Right. But it still works, because you would think that wouldn't make sense. Because normally it would be like a solemn flashback with the music and, you know, it would be like the dream sequence almost. And it would be in slow motion. Like, that's how you would do a flashback of a shitty situation that happened, you know. But this was not like that. And it was because you were kind of like, all right, well, what did he, because we don't ever really know what he did. And even still, as it was happening, you're like, all right, he's just beating the guy up. And then you're like, oh, his whole leg catches on fire. Okay, this is questionable. Like, but like, it's just funny narration. But even just like how hurt Val gets, and like I think even at one point Colin says, like, when you look at me, like, you can't see anything else except for the fight. Like, you can't see me for who I am anymore.
Yeah, and that's the scene where they actually introduce blind spotting, and they end it off with, when you see me, do you see anything else but the fight first, because your brain is now triggered to naturally see something first. This movie is just beautiful. Love it.
Yeah. I guess even before the party, I think the reason they wound up going to the party is because that's when Sean, the young kid, finds the gun. That was the part where I clenched my butt heavily, because I was so nervous.
Every time.
So because he looks and he points it right at his eye. Oh.
Yeah. The gun he buys at the beginning of the movie from his Uber driver friend. His son Sean, mixed race kid, just gave his father a birthday present, puts on this shirt that's hella small. You're feeling all like, just, you're laughing at him because it's so small. And then they come up and all their faces drop. And Sean is on the ground with the gun, and you're just like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Especially when he points it in his face, is like, no, please don't. Please don't. Please don't. And shout out to Jasmine Tiefus Jones, who plays Ashley, Miles' girlfriend. She's amazing in this movie, and she's amazing in the show on Stars, because it's a continuation of the movie. And she does an amazing job just playing off of Miles. But yeah, that scene is just another just intense one where you're like, oh, every time it comes up, my heart just races, even though I know exactly what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I also found it interesting that she asked Colin if the gun was his, like, went to him first, you know, just also just like hammers home, like, who would you question in this situation if you were to just meet two random people on the street? Like, even she goes to that level of like, not trusting, not knowing that her man was the one that brought it in.
My question has always been with that. Are you not trying to accuse your man first?
Yeah, I think it's more that, to be honest, because later in the conversation, she is upset he has a gun, but more upset that he'd bring a gun in and not tell her. Because she's like, do you think I wouldn't have seen this scenario coming up? Why wouldn't you have told me you had a gun? I would have, like, rather than why are you bringing it? Like, it was more like, I would have seen this coming and been able to protect my kid. So I think, like, both are, like, reasonable reads, but I kind of lean more towards her just being like, I'm the smart one in this relationship. Like, you need to tell me when you're going to do some dumb shit so I can at least protect us from your dumb shit. That's what I'm more about. Yeah,
exactly. Because even though I love you, I know how much of a dumbass you are.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm like the romantic side of Colin here, where everybody's like, you're crazy. You've had a kid with the, like, you know, all the above here. And, you know, the other part with Sean's like used very, very sparingly in this movie, but when he is, first of all, adorable fucking kid, not the point though, but like when he, I mean, it's a heartbreaking, they're playing outside and he puts up his hands going, don't shoot type of thing, which
she comes out the window with a smile. Oh, are you practicing already? I know you were young, but I got to start him early on saying, hands up, don't shoot.
Mm-hmm. That was just like, even David Diggs' face in that was just like, again, another PTSD moment right there.
Yeah, and you know, these are the moments where Sean is never going to be a mixed race kid. He will be a black kid in these situations. So it's just, again, without telling you, like hammering it home the way I kind of am in this conversation now, just, it shows you. It shows, doesn't tell. And it very authentically, you know, from my experience with my friends who are mixed race, they are I can't say the word, essentially black in situations with strength, you know. That's so me. Yeah, hello. Exactly.
Me. I'm a black man. I am black in Argentine, but you see me on surface. You are black. I am
the black. The police driving by, you're black. And therefore, it's just like the person walking by in the street, you are black. Like, it's just, and that is your, you know, it's again, blind spotting isn't everywhere just in the movie, it's everywhere in life. So we all have our blind spots, so to speak. But we'll get to the final, I think, scene now. We kind of covered everything leading up to now.
I think it's time.
And so Colin does work for a moving company. And just by happenstance, the moving place they go to is the house of the cop who
He saw the picture, did your butthole clench again? Butthole clenched so much in this movie.
It was like a horror movie.
I was like, it's the cop, this is the cop's house. Fucking Ethan Embry, my dude from Can't Hardly Wait. Oh,
who
my
killed
god
it, by the way, who he did an amazing job in that scene. Literally killed it, but also he acted his ass off in the scene.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. When did he get jacked too? That was uncomfortable. I thought that was weird.
The first thing that, again, I've seen this so many times, but sometimes, again, watching it this time, watching it last night, before it happened, I remembered, okay, they tried to slightly make you possibly sympathetic for the cop because he's crying and he's doing a really good job of showing that emotion and how much now he has PTSD, except for the fact, because I remembered it right before it happened, when he sees Colin. So Colin sees his picture, walks into the garage or whatever. When he sees Colin, that recognition comes. And what's the first thing he does? What's the first thing the cop does?
He goes for the gun.
He goes for the gun. Mm-hmm. And not only does he do the whole team, not only does he do it once, he does it twice.
Mm-hmm.
So though, you got your tears, you got your whatever. And I know I'm skipping ahead, but we can talk about it. It connects to him going for the gun twice. After the whole scene, Ethan Embry's only line is, I didn't mean to do it. And Miles is
motherfucker, you did.
Yeah, exactly. And Miles and Colin leaves the room and Miles' reply was, are you sure? Mm-hmm. And it's like, exactly. What was your first instinct? Your first instinct was to go for the gun.
And the second and the third. Exactly. And also,
right. And I get it. There's somebody in your home, but like you shot someone four times. Trying to kill them. If you shoot someone four times,
you shot him four times in the back. Yeah, as they said,
who's the witness?
Right.
You recognize the dude who's the witness.
And the look on his face. And it's just like, he shot him four times about 3 to 4 seconds after he very clearly said 3 to 4 times, do not shoot, do not shoot. And he wasn't armed. And it's like, yeah, that, you know, can see someone dismissing that. That seems like an unbelievable situation. We have seen that on tape in front of us multiple times where it's literally like 10, 15 yards away. The person has no weapons and it's their back and they're running. And even if they're running from like whatever, you can't execute people. And it was an execution we saw and he was trying to do it again. And what it sets up is, you know, this final spoken word, which everything said in it is amazing. I'm not going to kind of even try to recount it. You can go back and watch it. But why I love that decision and it works so well is because that moment, it's like, okay, finally Colin's reached his breaking point. He's now like, it's like turned the other cheek so many times and not had it returned, not had it reciprocated. This motherfucker's now reached for his gun twice. He already has a justification for what it's like. He's going to shoot him. And what does he do with the like angriest look on his face, looking like a damn killer at this point? All the soft features were gone. He looked crazed. He looked irate. He keeps his composure. He says his words and then stops. And that's it. And it's just, to me, the expectation, the blind spotting I have as a viewer at that point is that he's getting his revenge. He's shooting him. This cop's getting what he deserves. And instead, he is getting what he deserves, which is to have to live with this and face the consequences of his own actions here. Like in a more
which was his wife and child leaving him, which was obviously what happened. And yeah, there are some fates worse than death, and living with this fact will torture you more.
Yeah. And what I love that they didn't do is that they didn't stay on him. Cause a lot of movies at that point, like as they're walking out, you hear a gunshot and you would assume maybe he took his life or no, they're like, it's not about the cop. It's about Colin mostly. And then Miles's relationship with Colin and their friendship and then how they deal with this and how Colin deals with this and how Miles is his partner in this, how Val was his old partner in this. And it comes back to two lines for me. Every time I see that scene, I listen to the freestyle more and more to see what he's saying, because it's not a quick freestyle. He's going like freestyles and spoken word are usually like a minute, minute and a half. He's going for like a good three and a half minutes. And that doesn't sound long, but when you're freestyling, and think about it, of course he wrote this out, but when you're freestyling at the top of your dome about something that relevant in your life and you're going, it is so impressive. And it is so much. And every time I listen to it, I'm like, man, I didn't catch that line. Oh, wow. I didn't catch that line. Mm-hmm. And the two that stand out that I'm remembering now is, or three, is the beginning. He starts off, I'm paraphrasing, how you make me feel like a monster in my own town. I am like a tree where y'all chop me at the knees and put me in the trunk. Because when you chop a tree down, the dude at the party had an old tree trunk because that was nice and it was 120 years, bringing that line back and saying how you feel a monster in your own town. So you chop them down because all Oakland was a land of trees. And there's a scene with Wayne Knight beforehand where he's like a photographer and his photography was putting Oakland trees on top of where they were broken down and houses. So that brings that back. And then in the middle of it, if you don't hear it, you hear it quickly. Colin basically says, I'm putting it as a rap because the only way y'all will listen to us niggas is if we are rapping. So let me put it in this rapping form. And it's like, you ain't right. And then towards the end, his final lines are basically like, this is the first time I've ever felt the pressure of a trigger. But the difference between you and me is I'm not a killer.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's like, so the dude who's supposed to protect and serve is the killer, has hoiled the gun a bunch of times, but the dude that you are going to profile with again, with blind spotting, you're going to profile and assume is the gangbanger. This is literally the first time he's ever held a gun to somebody's face.
Yeah, exactly.
The first time he's felt the pressure of it. And like, you have to go back and just listen to line after line after line after line. And it is brilliant. And as a rapper, it is a technically killer verse. It is done so well. It is executed so well. And it's somewhere in between spoken word and a freestyle. It's not 100% a spoken word. It's not 100% a freestyle, but it's right in the middle. And somebody else picked that. I think, can't remember who it was, but somebody else picked that scene as their favorite scene to represent Blind Spot. I think it was Andrew Barr. So I was really happy when he did that. So I was like, good, I can up the boat scene and y'all up the real best scene in the entire movie. And the fact that we talked about all this in this movie is an hour and a half.
Right. Yeah.
Only an hour and a half. Yep. And like, you would think all this stuff we're talking about, people, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh man, I don't want to watch a politically correct movie that's going to put all this in your face. I'm telling you, this movie is hilarious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a fun ass time. Just with the Oakland music and the comedy scenes and the slang and Miles's charisma and him and Colin's chemistry and everybody. It is a good ass time that is simultaneously intense and you can't stop watching.
Yeah. And the other part, you know, I really recommend if you're having moments where your observations or kind of thoughts are making you uncomfortable is to tackle those a little bit. Make you wonder why you expected in that scene for him to be the killer and why you expect police to always be the heroes and why both those forms of blind spotting are equally damaging in very different ways. So, you know, again, if you view someone as an ultimate hero and they can, you know, kind of get ultimate permission to kind of do whatever they want with regards to the cops, or you get the person who you look at and think there's no way they're not going to take the violent approach. Why did I think they were going to take the violent approach? Either way, the themes are just there from start to finish. Yeah, 95-minute movie that just not any bit of fat on this. So I think that really does kind of sum it up, you know, kind of ends pretty soon after that. Is there anything else kind of you guys want to touch on before we get to our final thoughts and ratings?
Yeah, it's just a great final scene of like, they had their, Miles and Colin had their spat. They had that conversation, but it really sums up like when you have that kind of friendship that goes back that many years, you can have those fights. You can have those fights. You can have that condition. You know, your friend is on some bullshit. And no matter what, though, if you know deep down, you have those conversations and you talk to each other. And what I really love is a lot of the times you ask, are you good? And you're like, yeah. And in this one is like, you good? And Colin says no. And that one tear goes down his face. And without speaking, you know everything that just is going on. They just had this. And then immediately immediately, like a good friend, he immediately goes into the jokes that like that doesn't knock down what he's feeling, but also is saying, man, I'm here for you. What else do I got to do to like make you, what can I do to make you feel better? I feel you. I know you're not doing good, but what I'm going to do is try to make you feel better because this next house, I don't think we can pull a gun on any other customers today. I think we got got a quota of like one a day or a week or once never. And then just immediately going back to, I'm your boy. I'm here for you. I'm going to try to make you feel better.
Right. Let's start shit talking the Oakland Raiders.
Exactly. Let's just start shit talking. You pulling guns on people and I'm driving. What fucked up day is this? Right back to people who live in the inner city. That's what they have to do. But also, they can do it while recognizing, no, I'm not good. I am not good. I am not okay. I got to live my life, but I am not okay. Because that's usually the step that isn't taken. Mm-hmm. So it's just so much to this movie.
I think I'll go first since I've watched the movie the least amount of times. This is definitely a movie that I will rewatch. I think this is a movie that will only get better as you rewatch it because there's so much nuance in this movie that you can pick up on, that you can dissect, that you can digest, if you will. David Diggs needs to be casted in everything. He's fantastic and he just is not in enough stuff, in my personal opinion. I really enjoyed this movie, and I'm saying this as a white woman in her 30s that has only ever lived in the suburbs, so I don't relate to these characters in any way whatsoever. We were not brought up the same. We do not look the same. We do not do the same things. I was a math geek. I did dance. We don't have anything in common, but you realize that even though nothing about your life is the same, we as human beings all go through certain things that we have. You know, we have shitty relationships with our friends. We have good relationships with our friends. We have relationships with our exes. We have things that make us who we are, and that we have a lot more in common than we realize, even if we don't look the same or grew up the same. It's funny. It makes you think. It opens up your eyes to things that maybe you wouldn't interpret without seeing it presented in this way. I think it gives everybody's viewpoints. There's no shame in this movie. Nobody ever is made to feel bad for how they feel. Even when they're arguing, it's, you know, everybody's just getting their point across, and, you know, people are hurt. And I really enjoyed it. I think it was a great movie. I'm giving it 4.5 stars, and this was a great time, and I can't wait to watch it again.
Nice. We'll have our guests go last here, so that will be me next. Yeah, I've seen this movie a few times and I've always really liked it, but there was something about this rewatch. I don't know. It's been a few years since I've seen it, and it really, really moved up in my book quite a bit. Before, I liked it, but I felt there was like 3, 4, or 5 movies from 2016 I liked a little more. I'd say this is in my top 2 or 3 from that year when I kind of revised my list.
2018.
That's what I meant. Not 2016. Sorry. Either way, it was in like my top 5 of that year, but I do think it's kind of moved up, and I just don't think they made a lot of mistakes with regards to decisions. I think the performances were great. The stereotypes of white characters in a movie and like that bothering so many people I've talked to about this is kind of interesting, because it's pretty much every other occurrence where the stereotypes of, you know, kind of black people in movies is not brought up as a critique often. So I feel like it being on the foot of like the hipsters being, you know, a little bit over the top and things, I feel like really worked to the movie's benefit. I think the comedy is great.
Goat cheese is great. And if people have not tried goat cheese, I really do highly recommend it. And if that makes me a hipster, then so be it.
And I also promise you, I have met every single one of those white people in my life.
I have too. They're really not stereotypes. They're everywhere. And
especially, and I've met those white people in Oakland. So
and so either way, you know, if that feels unrealistic, I feel like this movie is very realistic, actually, and does a great job at the times where it chooses to get a little more dramatic, so to speak. For me, this is close to a perfect movie. One of my favorite movies of all time, Do the Right Thing. This really is, like I said earlier, Do the Right Thing for other coast here, in my opinion. I think this is going to hold up like Do the Right Thing throughout time. And like Do the Right Thing should have been nominated for Best Picture, but Oscars don't matter. I know, I get it. This is a 5-star movie for me. 5 out of 5. I haven't given a lot of movies 5 stars this year, but this would be one of them for me.
For me, if you are following at all, Your List Sucks Top 100. I am on top 100, and you would know that this is my number 2 movie of all time. This is easy, a 5 out of 5. And the more I watch it, I know it's going to happen at one point, but it's going to take the number 1 spot from Inception. I love Inception. Inception is my favorite movie of all time. This will most likely at some point in life take the number 1 spot, and Inception will move down to 2. I am Colin. Colin is me. My life, I am the dude, and not to the degree, because I did not grow up in poverty. I myself am a privileged upper middle class kid who grew up in a lot of inner cities, but also grew up in a lot of suburbs. But I was always the smart, geeky dude around all the cool kids who got into shit sometimes. But I kept away from the shit. My friends kept me away from the shit. But I was always that dude. I was the one that everybody liked to have around. Again, I was the geek in front of the cool kids. So very similar to that poster you have behind you, why I love the movie Dope so much. I am the blurred. I am the black geek. I am that one. And Colin is me in that sense. But also, as much as I relate, there is a lot I don't relate to because I didn't grow up in poverty. I never grew up around gangbangers. I knew some, but I didn't grow up around them. My friends weren't those. But it's the same kind of feel. Again, Miles is my best friend. They are almost the same person. Luckily, he hasn't done the level of dumb shit, at least not around me. This movie just says so much without saying it. It leaves to the audience's interpretation. While it does bring a lot of stuff up, it does it in a tone and in a manner that is simultaneously heavy and hilarious. The characters are so relatable. David Diggs needs to be casted in everything. I absolutely love Rafael Casal, especially if you actually know what kind of dude he is and what he does. And like, he played the ringmaster in the reboot of Are You Afraid of the Dark? And just, dude is great. I love Rafael Casal to death. I love David Diggs to death. I love Jasmine Tiefus Jones to death, on top of the fact that she is absolutely fucking beautiful, but also just a amazing actress. And every single character has a purpose. Every single scene has a purpose, whether it's to make you cry, make you laugh, make you think. And then it says so much about everything and says so much about life while literally being 3 days in the life of a person type of movie. You have the day in the life mm-hmm. movie, it's 3 days in the life.
Yeah.
And this is what life is like for people in Oakland. We go to work, we talk shit might pop off. We make sure we're okay. We try to not get in trouble with the cops. Cats fucking meow in the background. Shut the fuck up. And as extreme as it is, people might actually also have to deal with something as intense as seeing a cop shoot somebody or seeing your friend get shot when you live in those situations. But they don't make it a big deal, even though they do. It's crazy the way they're able to mix that. And again, 5 out of 5 for me as well.
Yeah. And that gets us to a 4.83 out of 5. That actually makes this our highest rated movie on Digesting Cinema. 50 episodes in, I believe. Yeah, this might even include Digesting the Force be our highest rated, right? Or would Return of the Jedi?
I think Return of the Jedi was the same as this.
Okay, so this and Return of the Jedi have tied as our highest rated movies in 60 plus episodes of Digesting Cinema. This beats out The Red Shoes, which Christine and I both absolutely love. We actually talked about it a couple weeks ago, so maybe we're getting soft, or maybe we're just starting to pick better and better movies as we go here. But yeah, this was really a tremendous conversation and a really good movie to go back and rewatch for me. Crazy, it's only 3 years old. I kept saying 2016 because I just can't believe it's only 3 years old. It really... Yeah. It has a staying power. And again, I say this because Do the Right Thing is literally my favorite movie of all time. This feels like Oakland's Do the Right Thing, which I feel bad saying it. Yeah, I've said it multiple times here, but I really do mean it as a highest of compliments. I mean, while you're saying it could eventually replace like Inception and your favorite movies of all time, like I've been afraid to make that list myself. But I think I'd be surprised how high up this would actually lay on my list, especially after this latest rewatch. So it's another reason I love this podcast and everything like that. And Christina also seemed to really enjoy it. 4.5s do not come from Christina, like ever. So yeah, that's awesome.
I knew Rue would not disappoint me with his recommendation.
No, nor with, yeah, having Rue on, it's been a pleasure to have you on today. It's just been a great conversation about the movie and about beyond the movie, frankly. So it's one of the
very things. Happy to be on. I'm glad y'all invited me on for this. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And good morning. Good morning, Anthony. sorry to disturb you. But next week, we're going to up the volume a little bit, but we're going to keep the mystery for y'all. Next week, it is a movie with 5 words or more. And we're going to actually keep this one a mystery, and we're going to decide it over the week together, and maybe with a Twitter poll or two to get some information. Christy V is Twitter superstar here, getting an average of like, you know, almost 10 likes on some of her tweets now. So
remember that one time I went a little viral? That was weird.
What was it viral about?
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man and Sherlock Holmes.
Oh yeah, you want Spider-Man to have his own movie, and not, yeah. It was hot take. For all the hot takes, Christy VEE19 on Twitter. Amaru, where can people find you on the social medias?
If you type in my name, Amaru Moses, in Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, you'll find me. The handle on Twitter is Nick, like the New York Knicks, K-N-I-C-K, 888-221. Shout out to them. I would say who they beat, but then that would date the date. So we're going to evergreen it, as you say. And then
I was at that game.
You can also find me at Bite Size Breakdown. Bite Size Amaru. I write for the Bite Size Breakdown crew. We write reviews of movies and TV shows, 100 words or less. That's my second IG handle. It's Bite Size _Amaru or Amaru, because that's how it's actually pronounced. And yeah, Facebook, Amaru Moses. You'll find me. There's not many people with my name. So pretty easy to find on those three platforms.
Right on, right on. And yeah, you can find me and Christina here next week. And as always, digesting more cinema. And thank you so much for joining us again, Amaru. Really a pleasure to have you on. And thank you for picking our highest rated movie of the year. Not easy to do 50 weeks in. So Christina, anything coming up for you this week before we sign off?
No, just hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving, and it's spectacular weekend coming up, so we'll see who wins.
All right, we'll see you on the West Coast if you're making the trip out. Otherwise, keep digesting cinema and keep eliminating those blind spots, people.